From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of April, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing. We'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I'll give you some advice from Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, as it relates to early planting of corn and soybeans.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago for this Wednesday. May corn, a penny and a half lower, $3.30. July at 335 and a half, down 1¾. And December futures, new crop at 349 and a quarter, penny and three quarters lower. March contract down 1½ at 360 and a quarter. May soybeans at 854 and a half, down a quarter. July up three quarters at 861 and three quarters. And November beans at 868, a penny and a quarter higher. New crop January at 871 and a quarter, 2¼ cents higher. Bean oil futures at 27.18, down 30 cents. The bean meal a dollar lower at 292.80. Wheat futures, July contract soft, red at 548 and a half, a penny and a half, or rather a penny higher for the day. Hard red July at 485 and a quarter, up 5¼. Livestock futures, live cattle at 92.82 and a half, up the 450 limit for the day. June at $1.87 and a half higher, 86.67 and a half, the settlement price there. April feeder cattle at 119.87 and a half, $4.95 higher. And the May futures up $5.57 and a half cents for 100 pounds at $119.37 and a half cents. Lean hogs in the April contract down a buck at $43.12 and a half cents. And diesel fuel for the day at $1.08, a penny and 9¢ lower. Gasoline on the wholesale price at 67¼ cents per gallon, up 2½ cents. We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us. I hope that you and Jeff are doing well today.
Oh, we're doing fine. Yeah, it's getting a little boring, but we're doing fine.
Well, farmers are moving, which they're supposed to be. So I think that lots is happening, certainly in agriculture, and farmers are out and about now. Support and resistance levels for them, what's it look like?
May corn, support 326, 302, and 290. Resistance 336, 347, and 360. And we've got the crossover point at 325 and a half. July corn, support 329, 295, 274, resistance 351, 364, 375, and the crossover point there is 324. On May beans, support 821, 780, and 708, resistance 860, 908, and 948, channel, top of the channel 1148, bottom of the channel 762. And that channel is actually narrowing is what it's doing. On July beans, we have support at 866, 829, and 820. Resistance at 903, 926, and 950. And that channel is 975 on the top and 829 on the bottom, but it's actually getting wider is what it's doing. So that just tells you that it doesn't look good for the coming weeks.
Where's the managed money putting its lay for the week?
Well, they really weren't extremely active this week. It seems like they're long soft red wheat, 22,000. They were long 25,000 last week. Corn, net short, 138,000 compared to 132 last week. Soybeans, net short, 2 compared to 5 last week. Soy meal, long, 32 compared to 30 last week. And soy oil, actually, net short 4 compared to long 3 last week.
Can you take a look at some of the consumption issues for me, please? Export market and then maybe ethanol.
Export inspections. Our wheat exports are running 7% ahead of a year ago. We were 9% last week. Corn 37% behind. We were 39% behind last week. And corn is doing pretty much what we've expected because we did such heavy front loading last year in exports. Soybeans 6% ahead of a year ago. They were up actually 8% last week, and we did just get the ethanol report out. In contrast to last week, where we were actually behind or ahead of a year ago, this week's was 66.7 million bushels consumed compared to 83.8 million, and that's down 33% from a year ago, which is expected. I mean, you know, we're just not driving or going anyplace.
Do you think that'll have an impact on tomorrow's WASDE report?
I do. I think, you know, when you look at the estimates right now, we're looking at estimates of anywhere from 1.99 billion carryout to 2.01, and that's in contrast to 1.892 last month. And I think it's basically all comes out of there, a slight drop in exports and then, of course, the drop in ethanol. So I definitely think it's going to make a difference. On beans, expectation is 444 for carryout compared to 425 in March. And I think that's a reflection, too, of just a slight drop in exports, not a big drop, but a slight drop. Wheat, 945 compared to 940. At the world levels, we're seeing corn actually up 298.5 compared to 297.3. And, you know, that would reflect a move higher, of course, in U.S. corn stocks as well as other areas. Soybeans 101.9 compared to 102.4. Wheat 287 compared to 287.1. Now, if you notice, the soybean number actually went down from 102.4 to 101.9. And that's a reflection of the idea that when you look at Brazil, we're going to see the corn number probably drop in Brazil from 101 to 100.3, and beans from 126 down to 124.2. They haven't been having the best weather, let's just put it that way. And get into Argentina, same thing there, 50 million metric tons last month down to 49.7, and on beans 54 last month down to 52.7 is what the expectation is. They also are having, everybody's having some weather problems down there.
Coming back to the WASDE figure domestically on usage, carryout, I think you said, was around 2 billion bushels, if,
right.
Relatively speaking. That's the estimate. And right now it's, what, 1.89 or something thereabouts. So that,
right.
That, roughly speaking, takes into account, if you just thought about ethanol, maybe the 110 or 120 million bushels that most thought ethanol would be impacted by already, according to what we've been driving. And I'm wondering whether yesterday's announcement by POET of another 110 million bushels worth of corn for ethanol being idled in those four plants, whether that'll actually show up from USDA, and if that number is actually much larger than what maybe the trade had already given folks as it relates to the estimate. So rather than a 2 billion bushel carryout, might it be a 2 to 1?
It could be. You know, I mean, well, when you look back into 18-19, 2.22 is where we were. So we are still lower than we were a year ago at this time. In fact, significantly lower when you look at beans, 909 compared to 444. A billion and 80 on wheat compared to 945. I don't know, considering the fact that they just announced it yesterday, if they will work it in, but it's possible. I mean, it's ahead of the report. It just depends. I really can't say for sure, you know, if they have documentation on it or if they're going to wait to see, you know, that it truly happens.
Yeah, on that note, USDA did give us a heads up that they will be doing the resurvey of producers in at least four of the five states as it relates to corn harvest. This is a different subject area, but it's still USDA. And that they'd be waiting on North Dakota because it's still far enough behind that they're not sure that they can get farmers to give them good estimates yet, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they're gonna resurvey Michigan, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin for corn and soybeans both, but that will not be published until the May 12th production report. And when you looked at corn yet to be harvested in North Dakota, they are 81% done, so they made a 6% jump from last week. That leaves 19% behind, and if you look at the acreage, you would expect that to be 665,500 acres. I used a 75% yield because of field loss and lodging and that type of thing, which would say that there's probably about 74.2 million bushels out there yet compared to 91.2 last week. The significant thing on North Dakota continues to be topsoil moisture is 43% surplus and subsoil 36% surplus. So you know that the harvesting situation is not good.
Yeah, and that's reflected not only in the numbers coming out of North Dakota, but when they did the survey on what they'd be planting for the coming season, their corn acres were way down, and I suppose part of that is they're looking to other crops, including soybeans, just because they won't have corn harvested, and they can't really follow wheat, corn with wheat there, so they're going to have to put soybeans in,
right.
I suppose.
Soybeans or take a prevented plant, one or the other, you know, depending upon how far they get and how far behind it, you know, they are in terms of being able to get it off the ground and then get seed into the ground. Short growing season up there compared to down by us.
Yeah, and while folks here are in the field, they're still trying really hard to get in the field to finish harvest up.
That's and right.
Finding moisture there is a problem, and they still have some snow, and while we're going to get cool, they're going to get darn cold next week.
Yeah.
There are a lot of problems in that part of the world. Speaking of the world, what do we know about China, Brazil, and Argentina this week?
AgriCensus had a report that said China's state-owned stockpiler, which is Sinograin, granted a release of 500,000 metric tons of national soybean reserve to the state-owned COFOL. These are always interesting. As supply concerns are going up because they have low stock levels and pretty weak imports in March. Now, you look at a soybean supply shortage in China was much larger last month because commercial soybean stocks reached near record lows, down to only 2 million metric tons by the end of the month. And imports during the month were expected to fall about 15% year on year. You know, a lot of that has to do with COVID and everything else. I think they're worried about shipment delays coming out of Brazil, you know, because Brazil is struggling with their ports and coronavirus. So that's why they're using reserves. And that came from one of the soybean traders at the International Trading House. And so a few other things that they've done, they closed the land border and the river port between China and Russia are being closed due to COVID-19. One of the best things I read was China is reporting no coronavirus deaths over the last 24 hours. Wuhan lifted their lockdown on all their factories. Factories have to open their windows 3 times a day is a requirement of it. But talked with our niece this past weekend, and there things are back to normal. They were out in the park over the weekend. Nobody wearing masks anyplace, and the restaurants are open. So they've kind of resumed a normal pattern again. You know, you always wonder. I never trust what China is telling us news-wise, but I do trust our niece, and so there'd be no reason for her to lie about it. When it comes to Brazil, there haven't been that many transportation issues, with the exception of the gas stations, restaurants, and some of the other basic services not being open. And if you've ever been to Brazil, there's a long distance between stopping places when you're traveling through the country, so I think that is something that is going to eventually be an even bigger problem. The Brazilian Minister of Ag and the National Land Transportation authorized production, processing, and transportation of food, grain, fruits, vegetables, etc., to operate as normally as possible. The problem they have is the same thing that we see down in Argentina. Some of the mayors of the cities stopped all public transportation. So now the workers aren't able to get to their jobs. So this is a mess. The Brazilian real has devalued 32.7% since the first of the year. Just last week, it devalued 4.3% and hit 5.32 reals per dollar. So, you know, this week in currency probably is going to result in higher production. Well, it's going to result in higher production costs next growing season. But I think I talked a little bit about this last week. The benefits come from the fact that they bought their inputs when we weren't looking at this level. So it's a situation not everyone is benefiting. And some of the sectors of Brazilian agriculture, such as biofuels, are being profoundly impacted. You know, their ethanol business is just going down. The price of corn in Brazil, and I get this, is currently 60% higher than it was during the first week of April in 2019. 60%. So, you know, Brazil's chicken and pork processors are going to need to import corn, which is a good thing, hopefully, for us. Maybe it'll come starting in May because domestic prices are so high. And that came from a meat group called ABPA. Corn prices in the physical market surpassed $4.87 a bushel last week, which is the highest nominal value in history due to the exchange rate. So just like anything else, you know, some people benefit, some people don't. And so it's a tough road to hoe. Argentina, aside from having the same problems as Brazil with the mayors closing the roads and people not being able to get to where they need to be, the weather just keeps on interrupting their harvest. Harvest is only at 8.1%. That's a 3.5% increase for the week, and that's slower than anything we've normally seen, and it's due to wet soils. You know, and they have similar soil to Brazil. When Jeff and I were in Brazil, we visited a ranch, and it rained for, I don't know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and that soil was so slippery you could hardly stand up. It's mostly clay, very red. The ranch owner said harvest would be delayed by 2 days just due to that 10 to 20-minute rain. Can you imagine? And so that's what Argentina's fighting with right now. It's a, along with all of their major economic problems that they've got, and it's just not a good situation.
Hey, thanks so much for spending so much time with us today and having such good information. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. You have a great day. Take care.
You too. That's Jackie Vex. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Earlier today, I spoke with Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, about an article he's posted to the Bulletin website related to planting early season corn and soybeans. I'm not certain that early would be April anymore, and neither is he. However, he suggests this: whatever you're doing, plant whichever field is ready, whether that's corn or soybeans, and do either one of them first. He's not much on March soybeans, by the way, but at this point in the first full week of April, he's okay with either. He does say a couple of things of important note. If it gets warm and wet, that's a problem for either crop. If it gets cold and there's a frost, that's mostly a problem for corn and sometimes a problem for soybeans, but only for a short time. Emerson seemed to think that the most vulnerable time for soybeans were just as they were emerging and that hook is just about to come out of the ground. Otherwise, a frost probably won't do much damage to them, even if they're up and growing. We'll have more from Emerson during our Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, and I'll post the article and his audio to our website today. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, it's a beautiful day to plant corn or soybeans in my part of the world, and I would suspect in a good portion of the lower Midwest, and farmers are really going at it. I'm wondering what you can tell us about the weather forecast looking forward, because things are about to change.
That's exactly right. Today is the premium day to get that work done across the Midwest. After this, we kind of slip downhill a little bit. We end up with waves of cool air coming along. Not necessarily a lot of precipitation, but it will precipitate once in a while. The volume is going to be low for a bit. I am a little concerned that when we see shots of warm air come around, that we could develop a little bit larger storm system, and that in this environment could create a fair amount of rain for some parts of the Midwest and some significant late-season snow off to the northwest. That's not out of the realm of possibilities. We have to kind of watch and see how each of these cold shots come in. If they come in with a little bit of a weak trough of low pressure in the plains that allows for tropical moisture or subtropical moisture to come up out of the Gulf of Mexico, we could really get a significant storm to evolve. So we're going to watch that. Most likely the area that's most vulnerable to that kind of scenario would be the eastern Midwest and or the southeastern states. So over the next 2 weeks, we'll be looking for something like that to occur, with the snow, of course, will be much further to the north. The temperature bias is certainly going to be below normal. I expect to see most of the Great Plains experience temperatures way below normal as we go through the week next week and into the following weekend. There should be about 10 days of unusually cold weather, freezes that will occur down into the Texas Panhandle, maybe down to the Red River in the south there, the Oklahoma-Texas border. It wouldn't get much farther south than that, and we would probably see freezes down certainly to the Ohio River, if not down into the northern parts of the Delta before this is all over. So a lot different weather coming up for about 10 days. Today is for sure the premium day for getting out and working in the Midwest after this. We'll gradually cool. The coldest air will be next week. And then the Delta in the southeastern states will encounter some stormy weather this weekend as the first round of cold starts to get into those areas and maybe some local flooding and a chance for severe thunderstorms in that area.
Are you concerned at all about the winter wheat areas of the United States?
Well, I think we're going to be okay. I'm a little concerned because of the fact that we've been so warm these past few days. If you go back and look at the USDA state-by-state summaries of crop development this week, most of the advanced crop is still down in Texas, maybe the southern fringes of Oklahoma, but we're talking about mostly jointed wheat. And at the moment, most of the hard red winter wheat country out there is probably not going to see temperatures any colder than teens and 20s, with the teens in Nebraska and Colorado, maybe northwest Kansas. And those crops aren't far enough along to be seriously hurt. We have had freezes as recently as last weekend in some of that area. So I'm not terribly concerned, but if for some reason the cold becomes more intense and it does move farther to the south, impacting a larger part of Texas, then we might have some issues with not only wheat, but we might lose canola as well in parts of Texas, and there's a pretty good chance that the Delta would encounter some losses too. But for right now, we're not going to go down that road, but we're watching it real close.
Turning your attention to other parts of the world, start in Europe, maybe make your way towards China.
In Europe right now, we've got a ridge of high pressure that's fairly impressive, and it hasn't been raining in Europe for a while. I think we've been 2, maybe 3 weeks now without a lot of precipitation. Now, up until this point, it's been chilly. In fact, there was a lot of fruit tree damage done across the European continent just a week ago. That's how cold it got, and a lot of fruit trees were flowering. None of the wheat or rapeseed was necessarily hurt. But it was cool. But now we're warming up, and we're still not seeing precipitation. Another 10 days of this will go by. So it's a great opportunity for them to start planting spring crops as well. But they're going to run a little low on moisture in another week or week and a half, and the need for moisture there is going to be much, much higher. In the western parts of the former Soviet Union, including western Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine, we're going to see a pattern somewhat similar to ours here in the States, with a northwesterly flow bringing waves of coolness through those regions and periods of light rain showers and a little bit of wet snow once in a while. The bottom line is that the crop development in that part of the world is probably going to be on hold for a little while because of the coolness. No reason for concern about freeze damage in that part of the world at this point either. And in China, oh my, we've had some exceptionally great amounts of rain south of their Yangtze River, which is probably about the southern one-third of the country. And in that region, they produce a lot of rice, they have a little bit of early corn, certainly some sugar cane and some other crops. They've had, since the 1st of March, between 20 and 36 inches of rain across about 4 different provinces there. The flooding has been absolutely phenomenal, and the losses on the early rice crop have been fairly big. The rest of China, where most of the wheat and corn and soybeans eventually will be planted, are in pretty good shape. So this would not necessarily impact our markets very significantly.
Hey, thanks so much, and you have a good week.
You too. Take care now.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.